Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Thanks to Sunday for supporting FilmSack. Sunday can help you grow a beautiful lawn without the guesswork or the nasty chemicals. Sunday is offering you 50% off your first box, so you can get started today for as little as $55 when you go to getsunday.com/filmsack at checkout. Start. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. We're good. All right. It starts in 3, 2, 1.
The world is full of complainers. The fact is, nothing comes with a guarantee. Now, I don't care if you're the Pope of Rome, President of the United States, or Man of the Year. Something can all go wrong. Go ahead, you know, complain, tell your problems to your neighbor, ask for help, and watch him fly. Now, in Russia, they got it mapped out so that everyone pulls for everyone else. That's the theory, anyway. But what I know about is Texas. Down here, you're on your own. Stick your finger up the wrong person's ass.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, and this is episode 601. I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian. He says in Russia, they only make 50 cent a day.
It's too
Dunaway.
Much.
Dunaway. Sorry.
It's too much. Oh, hi.
Hi.
This week on FilmSack, we put on our murder money pushing boots and go simple when we throw away all of our bedroom window treatments and head over to HBO Max for some ceiling fan set on low, deep thought, staring action deep in the heart of Texas. Deep. So hop on the bar, blood. We about to drop some tops, same old song, into the jukebox and bury this first of the Coen Brothers movies alive. Anywho, started a new side hustle this week. It's kind of a niche market, though. Yep. For a few $1,000s, I'll pretty much do anything you want. So long as what you want is taking photos of people sleeping in beds next to windows with no blinds or curtains. Hell, even if you don't want the photos, I'm going to take them anyway and show them to you. But I'm going to need them back. Oh. And I do some photoshopping on the side of my side hustle. So if I paste a dick butt meme on the ass cheeks of your cheating lover that you can't unsee, well, no extra charge. Randy, you got any more of that Alka-Seltzer and milk you keep on your desk next to that photo of your wife and your hairy chest? Why so much hair? Barf.
Barf. Four times barf. Nicely done, as always. Let's throw it over to Randy. Did you catch any fish while I murdered the people you hired me for, Jordan?
Hmm. Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Randy.
Thank you for... Oh, man, that's good, man. Do you feel anything yet?
No.
You will. This is good stuff, man. At least I think it is. I've never done this one before, and it's kind of old.
Yeah.
Hey, man, you know, it's all good. We're just going to take it in and listen. Listen. Mm. I have three things for you. Number one, man, it's so cool when there's like a door cracked open or A hole in the wall and light comes through the crack. Like, wow, man, why is the light so bright? It's like we live in a Mandela effect daughter universe where there aren't curtains. Number two. Man, I don't know. Have you ever tried going fishing in a town 200 miles away and then you don't clean the fish right after you catch them, but you drive all the way home and then you age the fish on your desk at work? Mm-hmm. Good times. Mm-hmm. Number three, have you ever really looked at a ceiling fan? Turn it on the lowest speed like a maniac and just look at it, man. So good.
Wow. Wow.
I don't get it. Are those drugs? I'm not sure how drugs work.
Yeah, how do drugs work? How do they work? With us finally, Brian. He once shaved Dan Hedaya's back for $14 in a Denny's Grand Slam Ibit.
Took 28 hours. Thanks, Sheila. That's right. For the next 30 minutes, I'm going to tell you all about this revolutionary new product that will change your life. Hi, I'm Daryl Pudding, and you're watching this infomercial for one of two reasons. You either fell asleep during Jimmy Fallon, or you're looking for an easy way to clean up those pesky blood spills. How many times has this happened to you? You walk into the office at the honky-tonk saloon where you work, and you find your boss shot with blood spilled all over the floor. What day is it, am I right? Well, what if I told you that I've got a product that's so easy, so foolproof, it's got the word simple right there in the name. That's right, it's Blood Simple. Well, I'm getting to that, Sheila. Blood Simple is easy to use because it's been developed by scientists in a lab. You see, blood is one of those great mysteries in life. Nobody really knows what's in it. Is it paint? Is it juice? Even our top scientists can't figure it out. But what they did figure out is the best way to clean it up. Well, Sheila, I'm going to explain it right now. Step one, find the most non-porous garment you can, a raincoat, some vinyl pants, or even a windbreaker, and wad it up into a ball. Now, making swirling motions, rub it in a circle, starting at the center of the blood spill. Good. Next, you'll take that bloody wadded up windbreaker and walk it over to the sink where you can wring it out. Did you make a mess of a blood trail along the way? Don't worry. With Blood Simple, you can mop up that blood trail each and every time you walk back and forth with a bloody windbreaker. Why wait until you're finished when you can do it every time? When you're done, simply take the wadded up windbreaker and the super absorbent towel that you probably should have used and throw it into the nearest incinerator. No muss, no fuss. It's just that simple. Blood Simple. Available in 5 easy payments of unbundled stacks of money. Act now. Operators are standing by.
You only get unbundled the money if Dan Hedaya pushes it across the table with his foot.
It's hilarious.
Yeah. Yes.
I got to know if that was written, improvised. We know.
Who knows?
How did that happen?
Who knows? First movie. Oh, yeah. These guys are mostly just like helping Sam Raimi do shit before this.
Right.
Joel,
he was in the trailer for this thing, right? Old Bruce Campbell.
Or Bruce Campbell was, yeah.
Nobody was in the you don't see his face. Uncredited, nobody was visible in the trailer for this because they did that before the just to get investors.
But he was Dan Hedaya basically crawling up the road, crawling up the highway. For the trailer anyway.
For the trailer. Interesting.
But yeah, it's Blood Simple, everybody. The Coen Brothers' first film. Scott Fletcher here tells us more.
Blood Simple. The owner of a seedy small-town Texas bar discovers that one of his employees is having an affair with his wife. A chaotic chain of misunderstandings, lies, and mischief ensues as he devises a plot to have them murdered.
Oh, my Lord.
Murdered.
It's dark.
So I like to name like a genre like thriller noir. You know what I mean? Like, because it's not a thriller per se. There is a little bit of chase and a little bit of action, right?
It's got Southern Gothic in there too. You know, people like that
blending for the Coen Brothers' first movie. I think of different genres and styles.
Yeah. It's interesting because it's, you know, a lot of people see this movie the first time and they go, "This doesn't feel like Coen Brothers movies." But I feel like there is a very strong kinship between this and No Country for Old Men. It's very similar, in a lot of ways. It's similar. There's a lot of quiet, weird killer creeping around trying to find people. Moments, no dialogue, no sound, hardly any soundtrack, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I feel like that might have been me partially in that, because that's sure one of the comments that I made was, this doesn't feel like a Coen Brothers movie except for the presence of M. Emmett Walsh. And Coen Brothers, for me, I tend to think, oh, okay, quirky. I tend to think just more about the quirky characters than the landscape. But when you pointed that out, the No Country for Old Men comparison, mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, they even do that in the quirky movies, like Raising mm-hmm. Arizona. You get a lot of these wide shots of the Arizona desert and things like that. So mm-hmm. it's, you know, there, that's kind of a more of a hallmark of Coen Brothers than I originally.
There's a little bit of DNA in there. And it's funny because I remember when No Country came out in 2007, the reviewers were all like, oh, they're returning to their roots. This is like Blood Simple. And I remember at the time I hadn't seen it yet. Saw it later. Probably 4 or 5 years ago was the first time I saw Blood Simple. And this is a rewatch for me. And they're right. Like a lot of that same stuff, less quirk, more dark drama. But by the time you get to No Country for Old Men, that movie's got, it's dark and it's more of a serious tale and it's more of a crime thriller, Southern noir, all that stuff. But it also has a couple of weird characters, like quirky characters, like it's the weirdest villain of all time. And of course, that whole thing's based on a book, but
Yes. And Cormac McCarthy wrote that book like 20 years after this movie, Blood Simple, came out.
Right.
And I'm not saying, I feel like we should not be talking about that. Like there's a couple of Coen Brothers films that do not fit in this discussion. And that's one of them. And True Grit is another one where they were working on someone else's work. Mm. And rather, when you say like, what is a Coen Brothers movie? I feel like you've got to be talking about things like Lady Killers and Intolerable Cruelty and so forth. These movies that they wrote from scratch that like are not, you know,
I would have gone Raising Arizona or a bunch of others besides the two you mentioned. But yes, like the ones they make or write themselves, they're the ones that are going to be the most Coen-esque. But what they bring to other people's work, I really like that too. Big fan.
I think them keeping the audience is off, you know, kind of on their heels, and also just ratcheting the tension up constantly. No matter what story they're telling, they're always making me feel slightly uncomfortable and intentionally. I can't look away because you just feel like something's about to happen, and they're really good at doing that. Yeah. No matter what story they use,
even in the quirky comedies, you get that Goodman crawling out of the mud, escaping from prison, and you know.
What is the
some definite tense moments in there?
Right.
So
it's like, what is the other person thinking? And that's always what they bring to the table.
Yeah, you're right. Even like Big Lebowski's full of tension that is actually kind of palpable and kind of hardcore, but it's softened a little by, you know, these people are weird and that's just like your opinion, man, and all that stuff is just like kind of softens the blow of it all. But this one is like just pure. I mean, I heard somebody call it this and I kind of agree. It's like a Three's Company skit, but serious.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. It is comedy because
that was my Twitter post. Right. I might have to rewrite something.
It is comedy because I thought the same thing, because it's all about the information that certain characters don't know and the misunderstanding. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's,
I mean, everybody's got a different perspective of this murder. She thinks, Frances McDormand doesn't realize that, for a long time that Dan Hedaya is dead. Right. Boyfriend thinks that she did it. He's covering up her crime. I mean, everybody's got a different perspective on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Her dream, what I love about the Coen brothers is that they've done so much work that everybody can come away with something a little different.
Mm. Right.
And by that, I mean across their entire list of movies. Yeah, so like
their whole
my
library.
Favorite Coen brothers movie and the movie that I feel is the most epitome of their work is Fargo.
Yeah.
Whereas my friend, a fellow cinephile from New York, his favorite by a long shot is A Serious Man. And he will not be debated on this. Like it is this perfect movie, right? And he's got all of his reasons for why it's so perfect. And so like this, I've seen Blood Simple before, saw it in a Coen Brothers like little like film festival. Like I saw seven Coen Brothers movies one day in Austin. And this was the first one. They showed them in the order they came out.
Mm. Oh, interesting.
And no one was there yet. I remember me and my friend Ken were sitting in this movie theater. It was basically four other people in the entire theater at this point. And we watched this movie and then I completely forgot it. I did not watching this again with you guys. I did not remember one iota of this movie.
Interesting.
And it's like, that's kind of a good metaphor, right? For the Coen brothers. Mm-hmm. This movie is kind of small. It comes along and some people see it and like it, but you get on to things that, you know, people really revere. Like,
well, they would agree with you as much as I actually quite like this movie. They would agree with you. They say, here's a quote, despite being warmly reviewed and remembered, the Coen brothers both declared this as their worst film when they were interviewed in a 2000 book called My First Movie. 20 celebrated directors talk about their first film is the name of the book. Ethan Coen called it, quote, crude. There's no getting around it. And Joel Coen said, quote, I think it's pretty damn bad, unquote, he says.
I'm going to have to disagree with them. I'm sorry, guys. It's
they hadn't made Hail Caesar yet at that point.
So this was my first viewing of it, and I was trying to separate what I love about Coen Brothers now versus, like, if this was the first thing I'd ever seen by Coen Brothers, would I have liked it as would I have felt differently about it? Cause I was like lukewarm about it. I thought, all right, I think I'm liking this only because I know it's the beginning of the greatness that's to come with Hudsucker Proxy and Lebowski and stuff like that. Or am I, you know, or can I view this thing completely separated from anything else and just as its own, as a kind of a slow noir plotting uneven at times acting wise kind of thing.
Sure.
And I think, you know, the further I get from it, and I just watched it Wednesday night, the further I get from it, I think the more that I'm like, all right, I think I like it.
Yeah.
but I still can't separate whether or not I like it because of what's to come.
Sure. That's hard, right? Because I look at it in the exact same view. It's like
you can't unring that bell.
Yeah. And I respect it for what it is and where when it was and all of that. But so many little sparks are in there. You're like, oh yeah, they're going to go on and make a movie that's a lot like this scene, and they're going to kill it with that scene because now they know better. They've got the money and budget and the experience, and it's almost impossible not to think of it while you're watching.
I watched it without that context because I didn't know anything about Blood Simple. I started the movie up and I did not even see their names. I was kind of like, I just turned
time,
it on.
Not this time around.
No, not this like time. Yeah, I knew what I was supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. But it was about 4 or 5 years ago. It was on a streaming service, and I was doing stuff around the house, and I was just turning movies on. I was like, oh, what is this? Blood Simple looks interesting. That's in the genre I'm wanting to watch today. And so I hit it and started playing it and kind of walked away. And about 15 minutes in, I'm just like, I sat down, I stopped doing what I was doing, and I just stared the whole time. And I just never stopped all the way until the end. I was like, oh shit, that's a Coen Brothers movie. Mm-hmm. And then I think just from that, I had no context of that. And as such, I really liked it. I think maybe when you come with that baggage of knowing what's coming, like you said, maybe kind of drops it down a few pegs.
Maybe.
I was trying to answer. I actually wrote down this question, which was like, I have this at number 6 in the Coen Brothers list, and the Coen Brothers list is like 20 movies now. And I have it at number 6, and I'm like, why have I got this so high? And I like, why is this so good? What is it? And it's really, for me, the miracle of casting John Getz and Frances McDormand and M. Emmett Walsh and Dan Hedaya in their roles. Every one of them, I'm like, I cannot look away. Everything they do in front of the camera is so beautiful. Is that the right word? I don't know.
It's engaging is what it is. Yeah. I didn't even invite my watch partner who usually watches stuff with me because she's been kind of distracted lately with a lot of stuff on the phone and things, which is fine. She's got a lot going on. And I was just like, no way you can't, there's no way she could watch this film with a phone.
You know what's weird about it though? I was thinking about this while I was watching it because I'd never gotten the timeline right. In my head, this is like, oh, this is Dan Hedaya way before Nick Tortelli or any of his TV comedy stuff or any of that.
No,
it's like literally after he had been Nick Tortelli once or twice already, he is now in this. like
but
a year
before
later.
The tortellis.
Yes, definitely before the tortellis.
Yeah. Like you know, you could be forgiven for placing it before the show.
Yeah. I'm a big sucker for a watch and stare kind of movie. Like I feel like Alien, the original Alien movie is kind
of
like
a lot
that.
Of that. Yeah.
I love just being like just drawn into a film in that way.
Yeah, and I think
if you're into that kind
of
stuff,
Fargo shares a lot of that. I think it's a Coen Brothers trait. I was rewatching Buster Scruggs, just kind of had it in the background the other day, and there's a ton of that in there. Like, it's just their thing, right? They want to let you soak in it a little bit, and it's about texture and tone and this moment of otherwise quiet. And where they nailed it in this movie for me is that scene, the latter, I don't know, the final third, where he's stalking her in that apartment and she's stalking him and this knife in the hand and all that stuff back and forth. Unbelievably cool sequence that I think is the template for those guys from then on. Like that becomes their strength, you know, in scenes. It's a little Tarantino-ish at the end.
Yeah.
It reminded me of that a little bit anyway, but,
I'd say Tarantino is a little Coen-ish. Like he comes along and tries to really capitalize on that sort of thing. This thing where you have a hand stabbed in a windowsill and another hand trying to get to it. Right. You know what I mean? Right.
Yeah. Right. And it's like excruciating. There's no music backing it. There's just the sound of the city outside or whatever noise is available. And that's it. And that is really uncomfortable in a time like 84. They didn't make movies like that in 84. Nobody was doing this.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Which is why I think it ended up getting
the Coen brothers kind of said they did. Like they were working with people who were making movies like this. You know, like they're not saying that. I'm not saying they copied anybody. I'm just saying like their experience up to making this movie definitely influenced. Sam Raimi has a huge influence on.
Yeah. Well, of course, I love the Sam Raimi pull in shot that they do when they're on the front yard with when he's kidnapping her essentially. And they kind of come zooming in with that camera around waist height.
Oh yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That very rainy.
Yeah. Even some of the, bartender, chicken in the bucket bartender.
He's our guy, by the way, total chicken.
Grab a bucket.
That guy's
he's not, we know what he's doing. He's playing that same old song again.
He's playing the same old song and hopping on the bar, but following his feet through the things, you know, Sam Raimi-esque as well.
What's Maurice's last thing? Is it the phone call where he comes
back, has a conversation, right? He confronts Frank, right? Is his name Ray? He confronts Ray.
And then
isn't the scene with him and Frances McDormand where he has her lie down on the couch while he goes and checks things out? Isn't that before? I think that's after
that. You're right. But you only
he goes off to figure out what's going on after he tells Frances McDormand to relax.
Yeah,
and relax.
Yeah. So for me, sometimes we have a chick in the bucket that is not a person.
Right.
And it is what it is it's a subverted Chekhov's gun. And in this case, it's that damn incinerator. Right. I spent this whole movie waiting for that incinerator to pay off.
Wasn't that crazy? Right. They said they're going to the original plan was even to burn the body or the bodies in the incinerator. And then they don't even do that.
Boy, that would have made things interesting if he would have tried to burn Dan the guy alive. Yeah.
Him coming out screaming on fire. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
I have a theory. I have a theory that the Coen brothers who shot all around Austin and Central Texas, that they had the incinerator. They found the incinerator on somebody's property and they filmed some shots of it in operation. Mm. And then they just didn't have access to it after a certain point. They were kind of known early on for filming things in order. Like they would film a script from beginning to end.
Mm. Right.
And I just have a theory. It's probably not true, but it's just one of those things where I'm like, why did they feature that shots of that thing and then never go back to it?
Right. Yeah.
Are those things still like legal? Because I remember working in restaurants growing up, and that's how you would get rid of all the boxes. And
stuff. Whoa, yeah, you had an incinerator?
My parents had an incinerator in their backyard, and it was just so much fun for people.
Are those things legal, though? Can you still?
I don't know if they're still legal, if it's still a thing, but I've never had one growing up. I would love that.
It's like a giant trash can, like the big green boxes, but they're like reinforced.
So what did it do? Did it put it like a little ashtray and you pull that out and dump that every time you were done with it?
Yeah, you basically set a fire in the bottom of it, and then you would put all the things you wanted to get rid of.
It just burned. This is a constant burning fire. Yeah. Just like in the movie, you just go out and you'd throw shit in it.
Yeah, whatever, anything.
It wasn't constant, obviously, because there was no reason.
Paint cans, anything we could throw in it, man. We were just throwing stupid stuff in
You can buy incinerators on freaking Amazon. I'm looking.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, well, and people used to just make them by stacking bricks, right?
You just
make a little brick house. And,
so you had a door
in the side of it that you'd go in and scoop out the ash.
I never had that. We had a small wood chipper, which is also very Fargo.
Oh, that's all. That's very, very Fargo. Aren't those fun things though? It's like a dream. We used to throw extra fireworks in there. Anything we could think.
Oh, it's great.
It's like if you go to work, it's like, oh shoot, I'm going to work. I better find something.
That still sounds amazing. Right now, it sounds amazing. Yeah. Like I want to do it this second. It must. And I don't think this may be one of the great. You know, I'm always scoff at sort of like what are the differences between men and women in this world. And I always think, most of that's made up or it's cultural or whatever. But I do think there might be a separation here where I like to see shit burn and my wife does not.
Burn, baby, burn.
Yeah. There's this whole segment of TikTok that's TikToks for men.
Yeah.
And it is not what you, if you haven't seen it, it's not what you think.
Yeah.
It's like a person standing on a bridge over a frozen lake and he's got a big stone. And it, like all the men are like,
that sounds great, you have to drop that. I want to subscribe to this content. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he drops the stone and all the men looking on are like, yes, yes, yes.
That's freaking great.
Sounds about right.
I will.
We're simple.
Since we got Dane Hedaya back on our minds, I just want to make a note again. I've said this every time we've had him on the show, but his IMDb photo is the most like not the guy photo that there is. I swear, whenever I see it, I go, that's not Dan Hedaya.
That's not him.
I
don't know who that is. Because he looks like a handsome man.
Or just a thing.
He just looks scared of the photographer. Like this is, I'm sure at some point he's had a headshot taken of him that he could possibly use for this.
Nope. Is it because that everything he's in, he's kind of hunched over and disheveled and kind of smarmy and it's just like, that's
can't
the
wait to take his shirt off to show you his hairy chest.
5 o'clock shadow. Yeah. By the way, something that we somehow have to find and watch is an episode of the sort of newer Twilight Zone. There was a newer one. I think the first episode had Bruce Willis talking to himself on a phone call. He called home and his own voice answered. But it was like the 80s, 85, 86 edition of Twilight Zone. There's an episode called Dealer's Choice that features Dan Hedaya, Morgan Freeman, Barney Martin, Garrett Morris, and M. Emmett Walsh all playing poker, and it's directed by Wes Craven.
Oh, shut up, dude.
That is awesome.
And we've got to find it and
watch
it.
That sounds so good. That sounds amazing. All right.
I've been Google Emma Searching
is one of my favorite Irish actresses. She's very good. Right. Emma Searching. I'll watch her. Dan
Hedaya. And I think he's got resting Hedaya face
the photo you just posted in our chat is less Dan Hedaya than the photo on his IMDb page.
I agree. This is how I see him. Here's an old one of him and Tom Hanks. That's how I see Dan Hedaya's face.
Oh, is that the one?
Yeah, I love that. You need all the lines on his forehead for it to be Dan Hedaya.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, he's not Dan Hedaya unless he's got those brows rolling.
What we need is M. Emmett Walsh to come in and Photoshop some lines on Dan Hedaya's face on that IMDb photo.
So that's right. Yeah, both guys still kicking it, looking good, doing work. You know, I'm pretty sure M. Emmett Walsh's last role was he was in the Gemstones, Righteous Gemstones.
Oh yeah,
played Roy, I think, the one that was in a retirement home, Roy Gemstone. Anyway, Walsh, I love Emmett these guys.
Walsh, like Emmett Walsh somehow contends for the main character in the movie, and I never saw it coming. This entire movie, I'm like.
Yeah.
Okay, so Frances McDormand is the main character of this movie.
She is
the person who is not understanding what's going on.
Right.
And all of her moves, leaving her husband, putting a gun in her purse, all of her moves are what drive the plot. And still, by the end of this movie, I'm like, okay, I totally understand why the Coen brothers said that getting Emmett Walsh to do the movie was what made the movie. Because, wow, like, I can't. And the part of it for me personally is he looks like my grandpa. My dad's dad is like this. My dad's dad always wore one of those cowboy suits when he went out. And he always wore that hat, that same hat, and so on. But there's also his ability as an actor. It's really amazing how good he is with his eyes, you know, with his posture. I just like what a catch for the Coen brothers to get him in this role.
I think in this role, at his acting this one, at some points he kind of talks like Brack from Space Ghost.
A little bit. See that.
A little bit.
He does.
I think that's fair.
You want me to kill somebody for you?
Now I'm never
just
gonna
give
not.
Me $10,000 and I can do it for you.
I'm never gonna not hear it now.
Now we're into Grandpa Simpson. That was kind of
was a little bit. I've never, as much as I love Brack, I've never really workshopped trying to sound like Brack.
It's just funny because he's so recognizable as a character actor. You just immediately go, "Oh, that guy," right? But
but
he's never not entertaining. Like I always find him. Super
I didn't know if I could believe that he could sneak in my house and take something without me hearing him, though. He just doesn't seem like a stealthy guy.
Or
you know?
Smell at him. He looks like he's got a real reek to him. Like he just reeks.
Yeah.
You know?
It seemed like if he walked to the front door. Even if you didn't see him, if you were in the bedroom and he walked in your front door, be like, I feel a... Emmett Walsh in my house. I can sense it.
When you're seeing that great shot of the holes being shot through the bathroom, my favorite in the movie are those holes. That little smoke trail that's coming out of there. That's actually not smoke from the gun. That is Emmett.
That's the stank lines.
Emmett. that's the smell of whiskey and cigars coming through the hole.
He had no less than two scenes where a fly was on his face in one of them.
Oh God, yes!
And then in the car, there was a bug crawling through his hair, and it's just like, dude, that
hot
guy.
Hot Texas, and some slow ceiling fans.
It's got amazing bug tolerance because I can't understand how he would be like, is he still in my hair? He's still in my hair, isn't he?
That wasn't even a fly, Scott. It grossed you out the most because it was a beetle. It was a little beetle.
Okay.
Someone put that on Emmett Walsh's face.
Well, like, that didn't gross me out.
That's an extra. That's an unpaid extra. That was not.
That didn't gross me out. I'll tell you what did. Hold on.
Gross.
What grossed me out was Nick Tortelli's barf count.
The fish?
No, it was the barf. It was the barf count. At the house before he gets shot, barfed blood all over the road, and then in the dream she had, barfed blood all over the carpet. That guy was barfing constantly. Gross.
That's right, Right down. What's his face's back?
Yeah. Ugh. Did you notice they gave a credit for? Let's see if I can find it.
Right.
Barry Sonnenfeld.
ADR barf from Barry Sonnenfeld, director of Men in Black, and Men in Black 3.
Was he doing the cinematography on this one? What was he doing in this one?
Yeah. He was just out of film school and friends with the Coens, and so they hired him to hold the camera.
He did smart move. We've seen him obviously Wild Wild West, the origin of the chick in the bucket. That was his movie.
That's right.
Adam's Family.
I heard Holly Hunter speaking too. I was like, that's Holly Hunter on the phone.
that's gotta be a really easy part in a movie when your buddy calls you up and says, listen, I just need you to leave this message on an answering machine. That's your whole role, right? Just leave this message
and make sure you hang up during the last word.
I'm trying to find the actual, there was a thing about this in her, where is it? Can't find it. Well, darn it. There was a whole note about why she was on there. She was supposed to be the main role, the main girl.
Francis.
Oh, really?
But then had she had some come up with a deal, a New York stage thing, and she is so conflicted and they couldn't do it. And they're doing all this on a shoestring budget. They only raised $750,000 for the whole thing. There's a note here that says that here it is. I have a little scrutiny for this, so I may as well play scrutiny, which is from another Coen Brothers movie.
Scrutiny.
That sound. Anyway, M. Emmett Walsh was paid his whole salary in cash, it says here, which was paid to him on a per diem every day on set. So
it was pushed across the table by Dan Dyer's boot.
And it says in several scenes, you can see the outline of the daily money in his pocket. Like, just
I guarantee you that's the same money. No, I guarantee it's the same money they shot. I guarantee it's the same money.
I'm not looking for any bulges.
It's got to be the same money.
Yeah. Any sort of scrutiny there.
Hence my scrutiny there. It's probably not true. But
you are correct.
Yeah.
Is this one of our first... how many movies have we watched that made it to the Criterion Collection and was restored and lovingly preserved?
Oh, if only you'd asked me that before the show.
Sorry. I was just curious.
Yeah, and just
Did Rambo make it to that? Oddly enough, I think it's also...
It might have. The original.
Because it's a really important film.
First Blood, yeah. I think it probably does. I was on Just Watch trying to find this because I was like, all right, ready to watch this. Let's go. And I usually just launch from there. Yeah. And it said it was only available on the Criterion streaming service and nothing else.
Does that still exist fully?
Oh, yeah.
I think it had some kind of trouble at one point in time.
Oh, it's still there.
The streaming part.
Oh, no, really? I went off to it and looked at it, and it's all there. It's the thing you subscribe to if you want. But the they didn't have HBO Max listed for I don't know what reason, because it was sure enough on HBO Max.
That's where I watched it.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah. Somebody told me, and I don't know if this is still true, because the streaming services APIs are terrible and they're not good about letting you know when things are coming or going exactly.
Right.
Not all of them are the same. That the Just Watch people literally it's human manual. Powered staff. It's manual when they put stuff in there.
I doubt it.
Yeah. Huh. Like basically like they're just constantly trying to catch up with whatever changes are being made.
Yeah. If something gets changed or something can happen overnight, nobody know. And then their site doesn't say. I think they're among the better ones to do it, but I think this is why so many of these sites have errors on it.
It's fascinating too, that how the streaming services handle all that stuff, because you would think if from our perspective, you're like, well, you want a well curated collection of films. You want to communicate clearly with your viewing audience what's available. And we're going to make that easy by either offering it in a, easily digestible form or otherwise. But I guess they make their money on their new stuff. Mm-hmm. So they don't really, if you happen to find other stuff, good for you.
Mm-hmm. Joel Cohen must have some fond feelings for this, though, because Frances McDormand, they first met on her audition and then they got married after the movie came out.
Yeah. If Holly Hunter had been cast, would I know. What would happen? Would we not have had Frances McDormand?
I need me a baby Hines, what she'd say all the time.
can we talk a little bit about how 26-year-old Frances McDormand is a freaking vision in this movie?
Yeah, she's great.
So, as a first-time like actor entirely, that's her first credit.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable how good she is. How perfectly she portrays this character.
She's only 12, 13 years from Fargo at this point. I mean, she's about to have a career, a hell of a career from here forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's awesome. She was also, Holly Hunter obviously comes in the next movie, Raising Arizona.
Right.
That was her second film. And then she's also in it, Frances McDormand. She plays the wife of the friend they visit in the trailer out in the desert. And I'm trying not to mix this up with Cousin Eddie. Because I do that all the time.
Yeah, because it's hilarious. I can see that.
You
can
play those. You got to get the dip tat. You got to go get the dip tat.
That's it. So, but then she would become just this mainstay. Like, if you're going to make a movie, guess who will be in it? Probably. It'll probably be Frances McDormand, my wife.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that.
Mm. No, not at all.
It's also a movie. Okay, I'm going to read this the way it was written. Somebody in the trivia wrote this. I swear they were 100 years old when they did it, but they wrote, "This picture was remade in 2009 by a Chinese director. It was a movie called A Woman, A Gun, and a Noodle Shop," was the name of the film.
Oh, yeah, I did see that. Really? I didn't see that little write-up, but I did see that they've been remade.
Yeah, but the fact that he calls it This Picture, come on, man. What year is it?
Yeah, This Picture.
Nobody calls them pictures anymore. And this was written, like, not long ago, like a year ago or something in the trivia. Anyway.
They like the films.
What else did it say here? Oh, so somebody mentioned it earlier, but Sam Raimi and the Coens went door-to-door. Showing potential investors a 2-minute trailer. This is the one that had Campbell in it. They ultimately raised that $750,000 in about a year and then made the movie. So this is like an important film. They can poo-poo it all they want and say, oh, it's our worst movie. But, and I kind of disagree with them. But also, dude, you got to start somewhere. $750.
Exactly.
Yeah, oh, exactly.
And starting strong is what we're talking about.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
I'd love to hear what, because I'll bet you a lot of directors have opinions on what their worst movie would be that would disagree with what, you know, the general public would say. Like, what would Steven Spielberg say his worst movie is? Or
I wonder if he's ever said
E.T. He won't stop messing with it. No,
yeah, he is. He says it's his biggest regret was changing E.T.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Swapping out the guns for walkie-talkies, that whole thing.
Right.
He says he now tells every young filmmaker he ever comes across, do not mess with your stuff. Just, it's done. Put it away. You're done.
Look at you, Lucas. James Cameron says, okay, right. Spielberg. Okay.
Sure, whatever, buddy. Yeah, I'm trying to find if there's a quote like Spielberg's least favorite film he's made, but I can't find it. But yeah, there's got it. Everyone's got.
I hope it is.
Legend of the movie. Crystal Skull.
No,
that was a good one compared to the one that I'm thinking of.
Really?
Oh, really?
Oh, shut up! You and your Minority Report.
Jesus, people, how slow are you, people?
So far from his worst films, could not even close. I wrote here that I really. Oh, yeah, we'll get to soundtrack later, but I wrote very 84 in the music and tone. Except I'd like the you know, the one running theme, the kind of piano-y thing.
Yes. Oh, I loved it. Yeah.
Like a recording of that theme. Was that by chance?
Where is that? Right here. Here it is. Yeah, this whole thing. And there's where is that part? Well, that's good. I know it's in here. Why isn't it happening?
What's happening?
Sounds there funny. It goes.
Okay. Here it is.
Oh.
See, I think that's cool.
Yeah.
The rest of it, though, kind of synthy and bad.
Very simple.
That part, it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stuck with me. I still think about
it. I have a little bit more to say about that when you try to give it a grade later.
All right.
Oh.
We'll take
Brian Dunaway.
Attempt.
Randy Jordan.
I cannot give you the full list, but I quickly compiled a list of five Criterion movies that we have sacked,
nice.
And then five that are on our will sack list.
Good.
Okay, so the five that I quickly came across that we have sacked are The Rock, Armageddon, The Game, The Breakfast Club, and The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou.
Wow, I would have not guessed those.
Yeah, I didn't think I never would have thought The Rock would have been there. I love that movie, but I'm shocked it's on there.
Yeah, classic.
Yeah.
And then the five on our list are huge, long list of watch potential watch. The Blob.
Mm. Really?
Yeah. Hard Boiled, which I mean, that's obvious.
I love
Hard Slacker. Boiled. Slacker is a Criterion film.
Yeah. Oh, really? Yeah.
Huh. And then also, and this blew my mind, Bull Durham. And Repo Man.
Oh, really?
Important. All these films are important for different reasons. And so you might look at them and go, those weren't good movies or great movies, but they'll have important.
And so that you did pull that from our must watch. So Repo Man is somewhere on our list to sack if it comes across.
You know what's funny? Okay, I got a great Repo Man story. I'm looking at it right now. So about a month ago, I'm cleaning out my office, trying to get rid of stuff. And I'm going through some old stuff that I didn't know I had. And in a box is a Netflix sleeve for Netflix DVD delivery, right? Back in the day.
Yeah.
Haven't done that since like 07 or something. It's been that
long. Yeah.
But I pull it out and I'm looking at it. It's all kind of dirty. Like they used to come to you kind of beat up because they've been around a bunch.
Because people have been touching them.
Yep. I open it up. Freaking Repo Man's in there.
No.
So is it just the sleeve or is it the disc in there as well?
The disc is in there as well. Oh, yeah, I forgot to send it back to them, and now that they've officially ended their male DVD thing, I'm never getting rid of this. I'm keeping this forever.
No,
you kidding me?
No, it's like a Blockbuster video card.
Yeah, it's so good.
That's fantastic.
Anyway, I think it is Repo Man, which is just funny.
I like
that
how
Brian
the Netflix sleeves used to be made. They're made out of like the same material that we make money out of.
Cotton fiber.
It is.
It's like that, fibrous
linen paper, basically.
It's like all fibery and weird. That's too funny because they had to, right? Because they were going to get mailed every other week.
And touching, you know, people are touching these things.
It's such a weird
sticking in their mouths as they go to put the disc in and then going, oh my God, what am I doing?
I mean, it's we are where we are with Netflix, but it's so weird to think that that's how it began. Like, what a funky idea. Hey, you want your DVDs in the mail? We'll just send them to you. It's so weird.
And there was
and
a
they'll
moment,
do it really fast.
Yeah.
There was a moment when you had to go onto their website and choose between Blu-ray and HD DVD.
Yeah.
Don't forget, you had to send something back before they send you any more.
Yep. Oh, right. Yeah. No, I was a master at that. Like, I could, like, basically, we would do this thing because a lot of the time back, you know, a few years ago when we were trying to do all of the watch all the Oscar winners before you could do everything on streaming, we were doing it with these DVDs because they'd come out so much earlier than the streams. Yeah. And so we had this thing down to a science, like, all right, such and such is going to arrive this day. We're watching it that night. We're sending it back and we're going to get the next thing the next day. And I think there was even a deal on the site that you could go on to the Netflix site and say, I've sent this back.
and they'd
immediately send you the next one, even though they hadn't received the previous one, even though you told them you sent it. Yeah, and so we.
Oh, you were next level. I just ripped them and returned them.
We were aiming the system so hard.
This is so not a surprise.
Rip and return, absolutely.
Rip and return, but this is so not a surprise. This is
of course not.
Yeah, you are going to do. This is your MO, dude.
If there is a system out there, I'm going to try and game it for my profit as much as possible.
That's right. You're playing the house. You know what the house is doing. Yeah.
If I could somehow tow a second car with a mannequin of Brian Ibbett in it, I would lift drive two people at a time.
Well, that's a thought that won't leave real soon. That's fantastic.
Real easy, by the way, to find a mannequin that looks like me. You just have to basically have a mannequin.
Yeah.
And don't put any hair on it.
Sure. So
put a Hawaiian shirt on it, done.
In the context of this movie, I was constantly being reminded that Joel and Ethan Coen have stopped making films at the time being. So Joel made that Macbeth movie a year or two ago, but without Ethan's input. And the word on the street is they're done making movies, not because they're mad at each other, not because they're not getting along, none of that. They just feel like they've done their 17 films.
They've done it.
And they're out. I really hate that. And I know, Dunaway, you're big on this whole thought of like, we should quit making people dance monkey dance their whole lives just because you know we want them to. Let them do whatever they're going to do, right? Be glad what we got and then let them live their lives. I'm a big agreeer on that point.
Yeah,
but I want more Coen brothers movies.
Saw what we did with Lucas. We blew it up, man.
Yeah,
well, Lucas was wanting to do other shit and he's like, I'll make a new one.
Yeah. And then it was bad.
He did.
Yeah.
Hey.
He made a
we're gonna have a new one too. Or a month and a half.
Almost like Lucas was angry too. He's like, you want a new one? I'm gonna have Jar Jar Binks standing out in the pod racing pit and I'm gonna have some creature fart in his face.
Mm-hmm. He's like, I said I would make the first three. I'm gonna get to it. Oh, fine. Here.
For the record,
I never promised you a 7, 8, 9. Okay, I guess I did.
Yeah, he did not write this new indie movie, though. Indiana Jones movie is not written by him. Thank goodness.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Gosh, I'm so upset.
Yeah, I know. Are you taken aback and sad by the news? Yeah.
Yeah,
it's called The Dial of Destiny, and I just keep thinking they're going to come up with a better name, right?
No, they're sticking with it. They're sticking with
the device. It's a dial.
Yeah, it's a time thing.
Death of Destiny.
I'm actually excited about this. James Mangold hasn't made a bad movie in my estimation. The writers are like three people. David Coop, who does a lot of stuff. John Henry Butterworth. And his brother Jez Butterworth is director, is also writer.
So close.
I don't want that on my pancakes.
Yeah, nope. So close. Nope. Don't say that.
I have high hopes. I'm actually super jazzed about this for probably not even good reasons, but I'm excited about it. We'll see how they end up.
Just to wash the stink of Crystal Skull out of our mouth, right? I mean, it's just basically give us something that can be the real true fourth Indiana Jones movie.
Yeah. And you can't go bad with like Mads Mikkelsen, John Rhys Davies is back.
Phoebe
Waller-Bridge, Antonio Banderas, all these people. Yeah. Toby Jones, good Lord, what are we doing?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway,
excited. You know, doesn't it feel like Toby Jones has been in more Indiana Jones movies than he actually has?
Yeah.
He feels like he's, you know.
It feels like he's been in, it's weird. He feels like he's in everything ever, but
wasn't,
he's not.
Wasn't he in Raiders of the Lost Ark as Tot?
Yeah, he was Tot. He was young Tot.
Young Tot.
Anyway, well, let's see. Back to the movie. Anything else you guys have?
Hollers. It's just such a, it's really kind of hard to break this movie down unless you want to go to film school and just really break down shot by shot. Otherwise, just the experience. To me, like I said, I like those films that burn slow and I can just stare at it. It's just like looking at a ceiling fan. You know, you just, if you really just zone out, you don't have to be on drugs. You can just zone out and just be looking at a ceiling fan sweating on a hot summer day. Yeah,
If I could have one little complaint, and this is super minor, this is not a cut in the film. Like, seriously, I'm not trying to take this film down. It's just this little thing that I noticed the entire time I'm watching it. And that is that none of these actors are like Texans by a lot. And some of them are pushing, like, and Frances McDormand is the worst at this. She's just out of Yale, guys. She is not ready to sound like a woman who's, you know, from Texas. She's just
I actually think I like that. It actually gives me, it makes me feel like this whole movie is an imposter, which is actually kind of works towards his favor.
And if you're making a movie, you don't try to go make excuses in the script, right? You don't, you don't have people say, well, you know, you're from New York and Emmett Walsh is from Iowa or whatever. But it's just like, especially Dan Hedaya ain't no Texan. He's like nothing like a Texan.
Right. And he's like a New Yorker that landed in Texas.
And, you know, the first 30 years of my life, I lived in Texas, and I like there were commercials on TV where Texans would say, you know, well, that's some guy from New York City. And that was a burn. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dan Hedaya, just I'm like sorry, your salsa. He is not the guy who is running a honky tonk in Hutto, Texas. That's just not.
Yeah, I do want to know if they were trying, if the Coens were trying to be ironic by playing the same old song over and over again, literally the same old song.
The song.
Well, what was the clearance on that? There was an issue, or some trivia thing. Dang it! Wish I had that in front of me. The trivia thing. It was actually another song until they got the rights to the Four Tops same old song, which was the song they wanted.
I saw that too. Notes. Yeah, it's something in trivia.
It was So original video version of Blood Simple couldn't get the rights to the Four Tops same old song, so they had Neil Diamond's cover of the Monkees' "I'm a Believer," and then later, later
so DVD glad. And Blu-ray. Oh God, I'm so glad I got this version.
Yes,
That would have been weird.
So much better.
Her face.
Yeah. Hey. But these guys, see, this is what I'm getting at, and Dunaway, you're grasping at how to define it because it's hard to define. But the Coen brothers have this ability to do stuff in silence or with audio backing that isn't, that's kind of discordant. Like the car's open and that music's playing, it's discordant as hell. It's like, well, I'm watching a dead man walk or crawl to his death, and now I got to go bury him, and then I got to, you know, smack him with a shovel and make sure he's dead. Like I got to do all these things. Meanwhile, there's this very happy song going on in the thing. They're masters of that stuff. And I gotta say, before I saw this, I'm not sure stuff was doing it for me like this, unless I was maybe shielded from the art house stuff that was experimenting in this way. But they were my first exposure to like that kind of filmmaking, and I love it.
I love that the characters very often do things that real people would do. So like if someone slammed your hand in a window and you know, and you're wrapped around outside, you're not just going to stand there and moan and then the scene ends. If you have to, you will punch that freaking wall. You'll find a way. And when you see people doing real things, it's scary as shit.
Yeah, it is scary. It's like they looked at that corner of the room and said, all right, what if he reached around and then got stabbed and then he couldn't move? And then how is he going to get through that? Well, he'd shoot through the wall to weaken it, and then he would punch through it. Like, that's a fascinating choice for a shot at all. You know,
if you had to choose, if someone was still alive, even if you hated their guts, could you, it makes you question. It's like, could you really swoosh him with a hammer? I mean, with a hammer, with a shovel, or would it be easier for you to bury them alive? And I'm almost kind of like going, I could kind of see where it'd be easier for you to bury somebody alive, even though that's much more horrific. For the person experiencing it, be much easier on you, because it's like, it would be so horrible to have that feeling of smacking somebody to death with a shovel. Yeah. That's like,
Dan Hedaya sure had a "I'm not dead yet" vibe to him, didn't he?
He could not be killed.
Like, but he sat for a while, in that office.
My karaoke song was going to be "Staying Alive" by the Bee Gees, and it was "Hedaya's
Alive." Hedaya's Alive.
Oh man, that would have been really good.
Come up with the rest of the lyrics and decided I would do what I did.
That's a shame. But he sat in that office all night, sitting there bleeding out. Like, how? I don't understand.
And the car ride. I mean, there was a long 2 days, I think
it felt like it, right?
Or day and a half or something, it felt like. Yeah.
We haven't, we haven't talked about it at all, and I feel a little bad because he's had a hell of a career since. But the main guy, John Getz, who plays Ray, not the main guy, but, the boyfriend, gets shot in that place from the sniper in the window.
The child's drawing of Kevin Nealon.
Yeah, that's there you go.
I think he is the main guy, Scott. I think you get it right.
He kind of is.
Him the main guy.
I mean, in a lot of ways, he's Llewellyn from No Country Again. There's so many similarities here, because even an early death and where you're like, oh, I guess he's not our ultimate survivor, happened there. But he's in all sorts of stuff. He was in The Last of Us, Pid Edelstein, an amazing little role in that show. He's in Doom Patrol, Dirty John, the new Fatal Attraction, all these shows. Ghosted. Like, he's a big deal now, and I feel like we barely mentioned him. He hardly gets a mention.
Well, his character is, I hesitate to say that he's the one that we relate to, but he's kind of the one we relate to in some ways.
He kind of is. Yeah. We see a lot of the film through his eyes a lot of times.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just him and us and Dan Hedaya's maybe dead body, but we're but because of that, he kind of has to walk a straighter line to be us. He can't do things that are too far out of the norm, even though
him running away from the car when he realized Hedaya was alive and he ran like that was so great. Ooh,
but so true.
Yeah,
so totally, true. Exactly what I would do if I was carrying around a dead person in my back seat, and all of a sudden they said,
there's a little part of him that was thinking, oh, I could throw Dan's body, or I could throw this body right in front of that oncoming truck just to make sure he's dead, because he's not going to get out in time.
Yeah. Yep. I was in that moment thinking, what would I have done? I think I would have probably hightailed it out of there. I don't think I would have stayed
absolutely.
Around,
that was
in the car.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I would have gotten out of there. But then again, I don't understand why his character decided that he needed to clean up and put the body anywhere. Why was it his job?
I didn't understand. Well, I think that's the point. That's part of a confusion. I think that's actually something very human. If you were to, got to protect somebody. And it's like, maybe if I clean up and you get a little bit into it, you're like, oh, shit, that ain't going to work. And so you have to pivot.
So wait, this is like Cookie this is like Ernie eating cookies off Bert's plate and then slowly. Well, look right. That cookie's not round now. I better round it off a little. Yeah.
Okay. That shit ain't working.
All right. So,
like, but what you're asking is the name of the film. You're asking why does this character do this?
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And the name of the film, Blood Simple, comes from this novel called Red Harvest.
Yeah.
And it was, I guess it was a phrase that people actually used to use. I never heard it outside.
Like
this film,
as simple as blood, like, oh man, doing this thing is blood simple.
No, it actually describes how you become really simple minded when you're put into a violent situation.
Oh, right. Interesting. Like,
so he goes into this office, this massive back room office in this bar. And he realizes he's seeing a dead man and there's blood, and his thinking becomes very blood simple.
Yeah.
And that's why he does some really dumb things. He should have just taken the gun and ran. Right.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's good.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
It's good.
I get that. I was curious about the name.
Blood I think simple. I like my description better, but that one's okay.
Yeah, yours is, you like yours?
Your factual information is fine, I suppose.
It's so easy. It's blood simple.
There you go. I mean, we change sayings to mean what we want them to mean all the time, right?
That's right.
Yeah, language morphs.
Eat your cake and have it too. No, we like it better the other way.
Yeah, I like having it and then eating it. Oh, I love it when the sun's out, when the weather starts to warm up. Oh, it's the best. I like getting out in the yard. We like digging around that garden. It's one of the best parts of spring. And Sunday Lawn Care makes it easier than ever to enjoy. Truly. So here's the deal. Let me tell you about this right up front. Sunday is offering you guys something pretty special. They're everything you need to get the lawn you've dreamed of. This spring, go to getsunday.com/filmsack and enter your address to get a customized plan created just for your lawn. Such an easy process. But what Kim and I liked about it most was we get the package in the mail, come straight to our door, no hassle, hooked it up to the hose. 25 minutes later, our lawn was done. That's it. And now we can focus on, you know, ground cover and the clover thing Kim's experimenting with and the flowers she's bringing in and all that stuff. All the stuff that used to be such heavy lifting for me, done simply through Sunday. And what's great about it is how impressed we were with the free lawn analysis. This stuff's so easy. You just kind of put in your address and this thing goes beep, boop, beep, and out comes a plan for you and your specific lawn. And it hardly took any time to do. Everything from weed control, seeds, pest control, all that stuff has been better. And here's the best part. We got two little ones running around here all the time now. They're always coming over to visit. And when they do, you know, you worry about chemicals or something weird in the yard or something like that. We don't have to think about that with Sunday. Because again, no crazy chemicals, nothing to hurt the kids or the pets. You apply it and they can come out and play, you know? Easy and affordable, too. Some lawn care services cost more than $1,500 a year, but Sunday's full season plans start at just $109. For a limited time, Sunday's offering you 50% off your first box, so you can get started today for as little as $55 when you go to getsunday.com/filmsack at checkout. That's 50% off your first box at getsunday.com/filmsack. You will be happy you did this, I promise. All right, well, let's get to some clips here. I've got a number of them lined up, and cool. They're all good. They're all fun times. Let's see what we have here first. Let's get to the right tab. There we go. I got a lot of M. Emmett Walsh. I apologize.
Oh,
early,
no, okay? No, so glad you do.
I'm so glad. I don't know how else you do this without getting a ton of him, but anyway, here he is.
I know where you can get those framed.
You're not creepy at all.
I took
Could
these
you get
pictures.
Me a sandwich?
Ding, fries are done. Ding, fries are done. All right, here he is laughing. I love this laugh.
Hey, good. Good.
It's his higher voice is what I think he sounds more like Brecht, by the way. It's not when he's talking real low and slow. It's his higher. Yeah.
Here's some. So I said earlier I kind of like the theme of the music, but I don't like some of it. Here it is. It's just so 80s.
This feels like they borrowed some stuff from Evil Dead and Raimi. And,
that's very Sam Raimi. Oh, I got to see that new Evil Dead. I hear it's great.
It's Sam Raimi.
Sam Raimi. Nicely done. if you don't want your partner to go to the bar, do you say it this way?
Ray, don't go to the bar.
Don't go to bar.
Oh, go bar.
Ray.
Don't go you to play bar. One more time? Did she just say it really quietly?
Ray, don't go to the bar.
Don't go to bar.
Don't go the bar.
Don't go to bar.
Don't go to bar.
The bar.
This part reminded me of this is Ray, and he sounds like paging Mr. Herbin. He's got a little bit of that going. So check it out.
You owe me for 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
You owe me for 2 weeks.
A little bit.
That sounds like Sling Blade.
Yeah,
a little bit.
You
owe me for 2 weeks.
Y'all got damn French fried taters. Mm-hmm.
Is there anyone who would go demand money from the jilted husband?
Yeah,
believe it or not,
that's bold
believe it or
as
not,
hell.
Yeah, the people do it.
I've do they?
I think in 80, like in, that all the time.
Look, in 84 in Texas, they did. I guess I don't know.
Like I would say, it may be where you grow up, but I know people where I live that would do that kind of stuff. It's like, we cheated. Whatever is just we still got some business to handle. It's right is right.
Yeah,
trust me.
No, I think you're right. There is some of that. Speaking of some of that, here's some prom night stuff from Brian. This happened in Abbott's prom. Now, here's the thing. I don't have a lot of context for Brian, so I have to explain why this happened.
Happy to do it. I'll do it to the best of my recollection. There was a lot of booze.
Yeah, a lot of booze, a lot of sounds.
And shovels.
Yeah.
Booze and shovels.
Booze and shovels. And the two different guns. Couldn't tell whose was which, you know. Anyway, here it is.
Am I screwing something up by being here?
No. Am I?
Wow.
Am I?
Was it just?
Yeah, I decided for one of my proms to do that old sitcom trope of two dates at the same restaurant, and I had to run like you excuse myself, like I had to go to the bathroom at one date, and then run to the other table and try to eat two meals, and then they found each other, and one of them said that to the
real another.
I never thought I could have two dates.
Another Three's Company moment.
Another Three's Company moment. Fantastic. It was all just a big misunderstanding. Quit blowing my Twitter posts, Scott. I know.
Gosh dang it. You've got to write a third one now.
Forget by the time mine comes up.
That, now you got to write a third one. Yeah. It's on you. Yeah.
Nope.
Here's a, bed or the couch.
You want the bed or the couch?
Hey, y'all want the bed or you want the couch?
Why wasn't that my prom?
Oh, yeah. Why didn't we use that? That was weird.
Yeah, that's my prompting.
Here's Barry Sonnenfeld doing the sounds of Nick Tortelli barfing. So enjoy. There you go.
Wow. Oh, that's that putting your face into a bowl of water and blowing out.
Yeah. He had kind of a bile, kind of nasty one that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't like it. I thought just the whole movie, I'm like, Dan Hedaya needs a mint. Somebody help a brother out. That poor guy.
Yeah.
Isn't this wild?
Isn't that wild?
I like killing people.
She thought
people.
I was rolling at marijuana, but it was just cigarette. Isn't that wild?
Let's see. We heard this already, but I'll play it again.
Stick your finger up the wrong person's ass.
Yes, that's always the answer.
Yeah, yes is always the answer. Yeah. It was always the wrong person.
Yep. He had a psycho moment in the car where he was talking about Russia, and then he stared into nothingness for a long time.
He referenced Russia twice. If he had went one more time, I was going to need some explanation.
Yeah, he had a thing. He had a weird thing with the whole Russian thing at the time. Here's that line where he talks about how much money they make.
In Russia, they make only 50 cents a day.
God bless America. I don't know what his deal was.
They only make 50 cents a day.
All right.
And was it trying to imply that he's the truest of a capitalist? Is that?
I don't know. Don't know what his deal was. I don't know what he was going for. He's a psycho in the same way that Anton Chigurh is.
Then he was like, forget if it's evil, if the money's right, just period.
Yeah, just
he's a capitalist.
Evil, okay. Horrible.
I love that you've picked the quotes from the movie specifically that make him sound the most like Herbert from Family Guy.
Come over for some popsicles. I got stacks of money here.
Here's what's this? Oh, how come you're so anal? I don't know what this is. I'll play it. Oh, here you go.
How come you're anal?
Oh.
Yeah, she was talking about how his anal up here in his forehead.
In his forehead. You're so anal up here.
We're now so far past people using the phrase anal retentive casually that like it was hard to watch. Every time she said that, my brain was like, what is she?
How come you're anal?
Anal. Why are you so anal?
Why is this movie referring to butthole so often?
Well, that's a good question. Here's some intense burying sounds. So this is Dan Hedaya getting his. It sounded a little Sam Raimi. Like that was a
How are you going to bury someone in a shallow grave in the middle of a perfectly plowed field? And just leave tracks.
These massive
right
tracks.
To it.
Agreed.
I'm not going to lie. I would have probably done the same because I'd been like, oh, you ever dug in hard dirt in Texas or any place? No. It's been recently plowed. Sweet.
I'll do that. Yeah. Well, not only did he do it out in a big old open field like that, when he was done, he planted the shovel on top of it. Chunks.
Once again,
please don't miss this body I buried here, folks.
Yeah.
Simple.
Yeah, I guess.
Blood simple.
Blood simple. Here is Holly Hunter on the phone.
Hi, Maurice. This is Helene Trin, you know? And I'm calling because I want to know just what the hell that remark you made about Sylvia is supposed to mean. She said you're full of shit, and frankly, I believe her. And hey, I love you too, sure. Anyway, you better call me soon because I'm going to South America tonight.
She really phoned that in.
Yeah, I was going to say, we have yet to see the greatness of Holly Hunter because it was a little flat there.
A little rough. But she'll be, their very next movie, she'll be great. Yes. Yeah. She'll be great.
Yet another... Yeah. Another not Texas accent. That's really far out, like southeast United States.
That sounded like Louisiana to me.
And, you know, I'm always looking for shit, so I'm trying to figure out what Maurice and his... It's Maurice, too, by the way. It's not Maurice. And I've always kept trying to figure out what...
Some call him Maurice.
Yeah. But I was trying to figure that. And the lady he was talking to, I guess that's who Holly Hunter was calling about. And I was like, what? Why? What is this little sub story? And I'm like, stop it.
It's weird. They were trying to give us more than we needed.
Yeah.
By the way, they don't ever say it in the show or in the movie. But Emmett Walsh's character, his name is Private Detective Lauren Visser. But they never say it. It's just in the credits. So I don't know how they
determine. They never say Visser in the movie.
Lauren name obviously is, his first name is obviously the Lauren, right? It's on that cigarette
lighter. On the cigarette lighter. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
that's the giveaway, I guess.
And that's kind of super Anton Sugar, you know, like that.
Hell yeah.
They come up with some weird ass names and that one fits the whole.
Totally agree. I kind of love that actually.
Yeah.
Like freaking in no country. The guy, I mean, when you name a dude Llewellyn, like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
They didn't name him.
Well, they didn't, but the book did.
Okay.
You know, I mean, they were made to make that film.
Loved it. Randy, as long as you admit to it. Okay.
Yeah. they were made to make that film. You have to admit. I can't think of any other directors I would rather have do that film.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people out there saying that the Coen brothers need to make the movie version of Blood Meridian.
I don't know what that is. What
is Blood Meridian? Another Cormac McCarthy book, probably his best. I don't know. That's a big statement. Cormac McCarthy is, you know, a towering giant of these kinds of books. You should read Blood Meridian. You should.
I love everything he's ever written, so I'm in.
Don't you threaten me with your Oprah book club.
He's great. The only book I think I've read of his, though, was The Road, I think, is all I've read. And I really like The Road.
That's a hard book to read.
Very hard book to read. Very
easy
good.
Movie to watch, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, so his first and his most famous book, the book that he won all the awards for, is All the Pretty Horses.
Yeah.
And it's hard to read because he wrote it in this very bizarre style. The Road is just dense. Very dense.
What's crazy is he wrote The Road in 2006. He wrote No Country for Old Men the prior year. I mean, the guy's got output business going on. But he's 89 now. That means that he was writing No Country for Old Men and The Road in his 70s.
Mm.
That's just awesome. And he's still alive, by the way, 89, still rocking. Cormac McCarthy, man. You know what? I'm going to read Blood Meridian, Randy. Not just because you said so, but also because I feel bad. I've never read it. I'm going to read it. That's how this is going to go.
I will join your book club anyway, though I... Yeah, are you going to read it too?
You should all read it.
I don't read. Nope.
Nope.
Is
there
books?
A comic book? I might read the comic book.
Are there pictures in your book? All right, he was alive when I buried him.
He was alive when I buried him.
Yeah, he was alive when I buried him. What is
M.O. How he's doing now?
I don't know if I confess that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I didn't know he was alive when I buried him. Oops.
Alive when I buried him? Well, I don't mean I killed him then, did it?
Oopsie.
Here's M. Emmett Walsh saying something that I cannot discern, so it's our job to understand it. Here's a line he gave. Let's decide what he said.
Just pop him.
What the hell was that? Do you guys know?
Come again?
I'll do it again. Here you go.
Just pop him.
Chris Pine did it.
That's it. Nailed it. That's it. Mystery solved.
Chris Pine did it. Yep.
Yeah.
I think that's it. Chris Pine did it.
Yep.
He was having a little Yosemite Sam moment where he was kind of cussing under his breath, I guess.
Oh yeah. I did the closed captions on this one as you do.
Oh, you did.
Even the closed caption guy was like inaudible. I don't know what the hell he just said.
Yeah.
Had a couple of those.
Good. I don't feel bad now. Here he is in pain. He's got a knife in his hand and all. Yeah.
Right.
And then, before he died,
meep, 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 meep. And then the water splash. And he looks horrified.
Oh, yeah, that freaking drop of water.
The drip.
Yeah. I love that, except they reversed it. So they if you watch it again, watch it carefully, it doesn't actually hang there that long. It hangs and then goes back and then hangs. It's like the film is being looped. And it
annoys me. Yeah, I was trying to figure out the meaning of the water, too.
Whatever it meant. See, and that's the thing. I'm sure it had meaning, or at the very least, it's meant to be a thing we all talk about later, but I couldn't get over the fact that it was... Yeah.
It was definitely intentional. There was a couple of parts where there was dripping sounds that were, I started to try to figure all that out. And I was like, yeah, I'm just going to read it. Somebody's already figured this shit out. I ain't going to figure out nothing.
You know what? Yeah. I want to know if there is significance to water dripping throughout the entire film. I'd love to know about it, but I'm going to go ahead and say I doubt.
Somebody has written a whole thing on it in film school. I guarantee you.
Okay.
For this movie, the entire film is completely pockmarked by lights that are outside of wherever you are.
Yeah, lots of shadows.
It starts with you're inside a car and there's someone just dumping water on the car. And then there's a person running with two flashlights at the car and the camera overloads. It's more light than it can take in.
Yep.
And then you reset and do it again and again. And like throughout the rest of the movie, you're on one side of a wall and there's holes in the wall and very bright light coming through, you know? And like that's there's something there, but I don't want to like overstate it. You know what I mean? Like that's not, the movie's not about that. It's just it's a motif and it's very beautiful.
Yeah. It's a nice motif of motifs. Good. As motifs go, it's a fine motif.
It's one of the best motifs.
I agree.
Google search your blood simple dripping water and you'll get plenty of Google results.
Oh my Lord, really?
You're welcome.
I'll look into it. Let's get into it.
But are there any that are definitive that actually feel like they would be the answer?
No, just a bunch of people saying, well, I think I have to go right. That's the reason why I didn't get into it.
Emmett's character was previously in a water torture thing in China.
I kind of thought about that like water torture because they had expressed a couple of times that some of these guys had military experience and that kind of stuff. I didn't
follow that. Yeah.
I'm done.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to know about Emmett Walsh's record in the military. It's a bad, bad scene. Right. Now this. Why, it's... Oh, that's a short fart. It's the film sack checklist. I got to figure out why
there's something behind it.
M. Emmett Walsh thinks everything he ever said was funny. Check. Nick Tortelli really needs to get over Carla. Check. And finally, you want knife for window? Check. Nice. Let's see. Let's do the soundtrack grade. Star Trek Connections. Let's do those first. There's got to be somebody.
No, nothing.
Someone. I mean,
it's such a small cast and crew.
Dan Hedaya had done something Star
there's
Trek.
Nothing. No? I do have a little quick topic that I just can't get out of my head, and I just have to say it.
Go.
Okay?
Go.
I just want you to know. I want you to know because you might not know this.
Go.
In Texas, 40 years ago, a man does not wear his hat indoors.
Mm.
I would have gotten my head smacked, not the hat. The whole head would have gotten smacked if I was indoors with a hat on. This is non-negotiable, and I take it as a sign that the Coen brothers should have spent more time in Texas.
I think you're confusing gentleman with man, because I think it's fine if you're not a gentleman.
Yeah, if you're not a gentleman, you're a man.
It's so random when Emmett Walsh does take his hat off, and I'm like, I breathe a sigh of relief. Okay, my mom isn't going to smack him. Good. All right. But like, it's so random when he does. He should just take it off when he enters the room. This is the smallest nit to pick. I own that.
All right. Okay.
I feel you.
No Star Trek connections, but a very important PSA from Randy. That's what we got there.
Sure.
Soundtrack grade. I'm going to give it a WM for weird mix. I love the piano thing, but there's a lot of mixed bag business going on. Some of the licensed stuff was good and discordant and all that, but I don't know. Could have used better.
And as it's been referenced to, this was not necessarily the theatrical release that you would have heard, or, you know, all the stuff was not the same, right? Didn't we determine that some of the songs wouldn't have been the same at the theater?
Yeah. The theater had the one they wanted, but they couldn't do DVD.
But then
the
subsequent releases until later.
Right.
I got you. Okay.
Correct. It's a little like the problem that Northern Exposure is still trapped in. That's why you can't find it anywhere. They had so much great music in that show, and you and right. They don't have the rights to any of it, and that's why you never hear about
WKRP. Similar thing too.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
So the score for this film was composed by Carter Burwell, and we have talked about him on the morning stream. He is who they go to for most Coen Brothers movies. He ends up having like his whole career is these guys' movies, but then he also does other things, and those other things are Martin McDonagh movies. Mm-hmm. So if you've lately seen, you know, Three Billboards or Banshees of Inisherin, you've heard Carter Burwell, and he also has been doing some TV. So he is the composer for Space Force and The Morning Show.
Yeah.
And
The Good Liar.
He's got a nice little career.
Yeah. That guy's done all right. His last Coen Brothers joint was their last, which was The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Everything else since has been other stuff. Yeah.
But he started with this movie. He got to know them, and he did some really simple scoring for Blood Simple. And then really, like, when you hear the beginning of Raising Arizona and Carter Burwell is on display, it's amazing. You're going to think, wow, this is a very experienced composer. And nope, this is just like his third movie.
Yeah.
You remember that weird stop motion thing that starred David Thewlis, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Tom Noonan? Is that weird, almost ultra realistic? I'll put a thing in here. That thing really affected me. It really got me. I don't know. It was weird.
Yes, Anomalisa. I totally remember this.
You remember this? So he did the music for that. And that it's powerful stuff. It's really good. That is the weirdest freaking movie, dude. So weird.
Yeah.
Recommended though. It's weird.
Never seen it. Never heard of it.
He is puppet sex, which is a little weird. Not puppet.
Sex. That's right. Stop motion.
Why didn't you start with that?
God, I'd forget. That should be your opener.
That should have been my lead. Yeah.
Well, and it's a Charlie Kaufman movie, right?
Like, yeah.
Kaufman.
Like Eternal Sunshine or something.
Yeah. Tiny cast, just those 3-4 actors, but it's quite good. Thewlis is really good as always. So much through line here, though. Thewlis was in season 3 of Fargo.
Right.
Our scrutiny thing came from one of their movies. Can't remember which one. It's crazy. They're all over the place. Okay, let's get to the social media post of sorts. 280 characters or less is what we're looking for here. And I like to shake things up, not too much. But today we'll start with Randy.
Whoa. Blood Simple. You never know where love will lead. Great violence can grow from the seed of anger at the loss of love and rage at betrayal thereof. For in your vengeance, you'll have none of what you seek. You can't outrun a woman wielding knife and gun, and with a shriek, you will be undone.
Whoa.
Wow.
Whoa.
Wow. 655 characters.
Hey, he pays for
more the blue tweets. Check. He's got the tweeter blue, whatever it is.
He basically just posted a JPEG of the
that was even better.
I just put it in my text editor, 280 characters.
Oh, nice. Exactly.
Oh, wow. Damn.
Fewer than I thought.
No room for hashtags.
I'm not a good character counter.
Smiley faces or nothing. Nicely done. Let's move over there to Brian Dunaway.
Mine's a lot shorter. Blood Simple. I ain't no marriage counselor, but that may be more Harry Hadaya than any McDormand could handle. Hashtag Torpedo Ibbit. Hashtag Three's Company.
Son of a bitch.
Son of a bitch.
Son of a bitch. Speaking of which, it's Ibbit's turn.
Yeah, you've been waiting for this all episode long.
Yeah.
I swear to God, I never saw anything, so I came up with this on the fly. Blood Simple. This is the most murdery episode of Three's Company ever.
See, it still works, though.
How about Three's a Crowd? Is it that maybe? Maybe it's the follow-up.
Was that called Three's a Crowd?
Jack Tripper actually had a wife or girlfriend that they was living with.
Girlfriend.
How long did that last? Not long, right?
Not long.
No.
Maybe two.
Maybe one season. Yeah, he had to work in a... he actually got to work in a restaurant.
That was so good.
Really? Oh,
that's
was a
all
chef.
I remember. Yeah. Okay.
All right. That sounds like Aftermath to me. Not good.
Someone give me your favorite Frances McDormand and Fargo can't be the one.
Oh, why? Why can't
well,
it be
Well, that's
the one?
Not fair.
Just other than Fargo. Give me your favorite Frances McDormand.
Okay. I'm making an admission here, and this is so stupid because it's so up my alley. Everything about it should be in my ears and eyes, but I haven't seen Three Billboards yet.
Oh, I haven't either.
Really? And I saw the three billboards that John Getz was running by when he was pulling Dan Hedaya off the highway.
Yeah, that's true. I did see those billboards, three but not that one.
Billboards, yeah.
It's hard to... Oh, that's hard to say. I really like Nomadland a lot. She's just always good. I can't think of anything I don't like her in. She's amazing.
I just can't... I can't stop thinking about Nomadland. I don't know how it has gotten that into my really, head so much.
No, that's really good. It's really good.
It's because she pooped in a bucket. That's what did it.
The mom in Almost Famous that you know, really she has to one. Or he the son has to convince her to be able to go out on the road, and she's like the protective mom, and then he plays Stairway to Heaven for her, and there's just this like 4 minutes of watching her react to Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. Oh, Moonrise Kingdom. Go. That's one I would say. Moonrise Kingdom. She's great in that. All right, go ahead.
Very good. It's a really good one. Yeah. I'm going to go with Transformers Dark of the Moon just to make Randy angry.
Nice. Oh, what a great choice.
Yeah. She was in that? I didn't know that. Oh, yeah, 2011. Look at that. Wow. Yeah. Wasn't Madagascar 3 Europe's Most Wanted as Captain Chantel DuBois?
Yeah,
that would have
been a close follow-up, yeah.
Okay, all right.
Since he cut me off the knees with Can't Say Fargo.
Yeah.
We're just saying, I'm saying, like, what's your number two then? Fargo, what's your second favorite?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And I think like, we're showing that she has a lot of range.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
For sure.
She's not just pooping in a bucket.
No, she's like, hey, Joel, I'll be in everything you make, but also I got other cool shit to do.
She's not just that, but she is also that.
Yeah.
She's so more than just a pretty poop in a bucket.
That's right. Uh-huh. And this is a couple that has... You know, they're one of those Hollywood couples that just defy logic and stay together. They just, since they met, they've never, no split. And anyway, she's amazing. And she always knows when it's your friend back there in the chipper then. She knows that every time. All right.
It's your friend back there in the chipper.
Nicely done, everybody. Let's move on to today's alternate title. This was almost called, here we go again. It was almost called Three's Company, a dramatization. Or
it's stealing my idea, Scott.
I know. I just keep doing it. Or don't forget to wash your hands.
Oh, Nash.
Because he was so gross.
Very nice. Whole thing.
We got an email today. We're going to do it in audio form. I decided to convert this to audio. This is from, they're making the case for spam, the meat spam.
The stuff you fry up in the pan.
Yeah, stuff we talked. We had a whole discussion on the show about it. So they wrote in, and it just felt appropriate to convert it to audio. So that's what I did. So here it is. Enjoy.
Hey, guys. I'm the same age-ish as all of you, 1973, and I have long wanted to comment on many a thing since listening to episode 1, but the comments about canned meats in the latest episode regarding Black Rain has finally gotten me to take action. Canned meats. So, Spam, low sodium, is a wonderful thing to make various meals from. Fried rye or a sub for bacon or pancetta in any dish is great. I was forced to eat liver and onions as a kid. What's on the table is what's to eat was my parents' motto. I am no fan of liver, but a liver pate can be amazing, and various canned versions to create a pate or other culinary concoctions is worth it. Additionally, on the East Coast, we have multiple deli meats that are essentially the same thing. Mortadella, liverwurst, and Polish or olive loaf are made from the same thing.
Yes.
All delish in their own right and a classic part of charcuterie. You all are my faves, my absolute favorite podcast, and love the interaction and connection you all have. Keep it up. Dave in RI.
All right. Dave in Rhode Island, like baby.
I love it. That's great.
I love the content. I love the translation.
I like the
was a real passion totally to it. He probably has, his totally voice works. Is nothing like this fake voice, but it felt right.
But you're right. All the pate meats,
everything
man.
You said. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would eat spam. I think we said it on the episode. I'm not sure. I don't know if we were too hard on spam, but I would eat spam right now. It's not a problem.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. You eat spam, you just don't.
I always end up with like a little bone fragment. I can't do
Isn't
spam.
Isn't that weird that you always find the little bone fragment? I do that too sometimes. It's like, it's weird.
I always think it's my own teeth. I'm like, oh, shit.
Sometimes it is.
Yeah, sometimes it is. Go ahead.
We would be sent out to play on a Saturday morning after cartoons, and you go outside and you play hard to get real hungry. come in and my dad would hand me a can of Vienna sausages.
Nice. Oh man, here's that your, is a dad who lunch. Does not want to make shit. He's like, here, eat this. You pop the top off and eat these six wieners that are in here, son.
I can eat exactly two Vieners before I get sick.
And don't you just want to apologize to the entire country of Austria?
Yeah.
Like they have nothing to do with this.
No, we didn't canned.
There's no way. There's no way you go to Austria or Vienna and you go to some restaurant and say, I'd like a Vienna sausage, and this comes out. No, there's no way.
I bet you they have embraced it. I bet you there are enough redneck hicks
from
my hometown that have been to those places that they've leaned into it.
Okay.
And
you find out. Just like the water connections.
I'll go there. I'll ask. I'll film it.
All right. You let us know. Would love to hear. We got a couple of texts here. Three, in fact. They're very short. Here's the first one from an anonymous listener who sent this to 801-471-0462. He says, Hans Zimmer composed the sound for the new BMW electric cars.
Oh, wow. Oh, the little noise that keeps from so people know to get the hell out of the way.
Yeah, so they has some sound to them. They don't sound exactly like an engine, but they sound like
It's got a little musical like a
little
notes.
Warning sound. Interesting. Yeah, yeah.
So Hans freaking Zimmer, man. That's a cool paycheck. Yeah.
That's the last thing you hear sometimes. Somebody's the last thing they hear.
That's right.
Right. Yeah.
Tim in Maine wrote in, says, love the show, longtime listener. Does anyone else think Randy sounds like James Spader? Love the show, Tim.
Let me think about it for a minute.
A little bit.
A little bit.
Do your best James Spader.
I had been told in advance to...
perfect.
Don't tell anyone in advance. What do you mean in advance?
What is prepare?
Yeah, what is prepare? This? Do you think we advance. Edit this show? Freaking forget it.
I spoke to James Spader.
No, I could see it. Like when James Spader on Seinfeld, just watched an episode, he's like, well, George, I do want to apologize.
Good call.
Yeah, I think he's on to something. I think Tim from Maine is smart.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
We like him too. We like that guy. He's good.
I feel so sorry for James Spader because he has not worked very well with his hair loss. His hair loss later in life has been something that he has struggled through.
On The Office, he had a ton of hair still for that brief season.
Yeah, but the Blacklist, it's probably more apparent.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he shaved it.
I like his older look.
Or the new movie starring M. Emmett Walsh, The Blacklist.
The Blacklist. Nice. Ding, fries are done. I'm looking actually right now at his. Where's his IMDb photo? Let's see. James Spader.
He probably wouldn't use one of those, right? If he's having trouble with it.
He's bald.
I would do images.google.com.
He's very bald James in it. He's embraced it for his IMDb.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know.
Young James Spader had such great hair. The best hair in Hollywood, but this is like the mid 80s or something.
Yeah.
So beautiful.
Yeah, he had really good hair.
Hey, you got a price to pay.
He just always tucked his head to the side in his photos.
Yeah. So do I.
Do you? Oh, wow.
It's important to me that I get my best the best side of my face and turn it.
Well, the one we have on the site is you dead on, just straight on with the pillow behind you, like you're some kind of sexy pillow ad.
That is a curtain. That is a curtain. It's right here next to me.
Oh, I thought it was
blowing behind me. It's blowing into my back, that curtain.
I could have sworn it was a pillow. You have windows
with no curtains on it? Come on.
Yeah, come on.
I like this photo from the Tribeca TV festival. It just looks like.
Yeah, it's the same angle.
Welcome to my repair shop. How can I fix your TV?
You could measure that angle. It is still the same angle every time.
Maybe he's got I don't know. He's got a spine thing.
Nothing wrong with that. He's got a pose.
Yeah.
He's got a pose. There's nothing wrong with that.
I'm a James Spader fan from day one.
Through and through. Just great. Sure.
But even Ultron. Ultron's a bad movie. He's great in it.
Yeah.
His voice is perfect for Ultron.
I definitely don't want to do that argument again, but I do want to... James Spader in a Coen Brothers movie?
Sure.
Is that a...
Why not?
Is that a thing? I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it's happened, but I wouldn't mind. It'd be fine. Yeah.
I want it.
Yeah, he'd be quirky.
I want it. Yeah. I want it right here in my lap.
There's all kinds of casting that they still...
James Spader, there's a great, I think, Bad Influence, James Spader and Rob Lowe, where James Spader actually plays the good guy who's becoming the bad influence thanks to Rob Lowe.
Oh, and, interesting. It's
quite the change of events, the change of characters.
I remember being impressed with him on Lincoln, the movie Lincoln, the Spielberg movie, because I was surprised. I was like, whoa.
is.
Like, look at this guy in like a post-Elizabethan freaking clothes and hair. That was just a weird look for him.
Clothes and hair?
He was really good. He's our Seinfeld connection.
I'm being extra smart assy today.
Y'all yeah, you really are. Man. Right.
And
yeah,
well I can done. Feel it.
Mute.
Well Mutin.
Oh, he's got a. He has worked a lot, this guy.
He has. Oh, yeah.
He was in Endless Love. All right. Moving on. Let's do this final message from Retlaw7, who says, I have a disagreement with Bananas It from last week's film section.
Oh, okay. Oh.
Yeah.
As long as it wasn't one of us.
No,
for a change. Yeah.
It's fine.
Thank God.
He says, in his message about dislocation, he said, quote, they would not be able to do physical activity immediately afterwards, or right after a dislocation, unquote. Disagree. Growing up on... Growing up, my knee would randomly dislocate, and I made certain when I made certain side-to-side motions, and I would have to lay there in excruciating pain until somebody would help me put it back in, but afterwards, it was fine. One time in ninth grade, I was stretching for my 200-yard meet and track, which was literally seconds away, when my knee dislocated right there on the track. My coaches were there to quickly help me pop it back in, and I was able to get the race, and I got first, which is why I love telling the story. Love the show, though, Retlaw. So, yeah. All right. So maybe movies aren't all that wrong about popping it in and keep moving, you know?
Yeah, I certainly, my physical therapist has had to do that with my kneecap and taping it and that sort of thing a couple times since January, because I would, with the back and leg issues that I've been having, I tend to favor my left leg. And in bending, I would put more weight and pressure on my left leg and stuff like that. And so... Yeah, my kneecap has slid out of joint a couple times.
It's the shittiest part about having issues like this is that you do compensate with the other leg or other arm or whatever, and then you end up effing that one up because that hurts in new ways. It sucks.
Yep.
Look at it.
I don't understand it. I do not understand it. I ran a 5K Thursday morning, and so you don't feel bad until the next day. Uh-huh. And all day yesterday, one of my feet hurt, but not the other one. Why? Why does only one of my feet hurt?
Well, now you limp in a way that will make your other foot hurt, and it'll catch up. See, that's the idea.
That's terrible, Scott. Why did you don't put that on me?
I'm telling you, that's what we've learned. All right,
whatever, James Bader.
Those are your chunks of communication.
Chunks of mail.
But we're now going to move on to remind you that our entire process here is because you guys help pay for it for real over at patreon.com/filmsack. We've got three brand new folks this week I want to mention: Brent, Paddock, Callahan, and Laundry Scent. Seen that guy around? Seen that dude around before?
Tommy Callahan, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks you guys. You guys are all awesome. If you enjoy getting no commercials ever, pre-show content every week, monthly specials from hosts, and movie related art prints in the mail, well, good news. Sign up today and it can all be yours. Dunaways is coming up next week. We'll have... Yes. I got to figure out what the order is because I don't know who's next after Dunaway.
I'm looking at the pinned post in our Discord.
Yep, yep. And now Randy's next.
And since there's four of us, we do one every 3 months, right? So now we're just repeating the same exact months as the previous year.
Yep. Yeah, which is
all my months begin with A.
What?
Except for December.
Well, then
I don't have a device for when mine go.
Nope.
They just go. Anyway,
they just happened Scott says, hey, where's that shit?
And I go, where's my show? Oh, shit. Yeah, it's coming.
My shit.
You'll get that next week sometime midweek, so watch for that. Patreon.com/filmsack, once again, is the place to go. Our next movie is Hollow Man on the HBO Max. Hollow
just
Man.
Like, just like me.
I have never seen. This is the only Verhoeven movie I think I've not seen.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I've seen all the rest, and some are good and some suck, but... You know, multiple viewings of RoboCop notwithstanding, Hollow Man, for whatever reason, just slipped my radar and I never saw it. So I'm excited to finally see it. And it's an invisible man, but with a twist, right? Or something. He's a dick.
Yeah, he's hollow and you can see through him because he's hollow.
Yeah. And he's an ass.
Like an action figure. Yes.
And it's his real life wife. Kara Sedgwick is in this, right? Do I have that right or no?
Oh, is she? I don't know.
Oh, you know who it is. Sorry, I'm wrong. It's the other 80s actress. The one we like in other stuff. She was in The Boys season one. She was the babysitter.
Oh, Elizabeth Shue.
Elizabeth Shue. I think that's her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway. Yeah. So Hollow. And Hollowest like of Men next week.
And this is entirely because a TMS listener reached out and suggested it. This, I'm just saying, you all you listeners out there, you can make things happen.
Yeah, you can. You have more power.
You can make a change.
Yeah.
Make the change you want to see. And film sack.
How's the song go? I can't think of it. There's a song.
It goes like that. Yeah.
I was going to say, it doesn't go like that. Whatever it is.
Something with the change. There's a change song. From Wilson Phillips, right?
Go-Go Gadget?
What am I thinking of? Change.
Well, you certainly could be thinking of Wilson Phillips. I don't be able to help you on that.
Shit.
Who's Wilson Phillips?
Wilson Willips. That's an amazing twist.
It's going to go be a less of an ass to everybody else.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
And by the way, Scott. Exactly.
What's your deal today, Dunaway?
Yeah, man. Going right to the throat. What, Randy? You were saying spicy. Something?
I just want to remind you, Hollow Man for us is on HBO Max.
Oh, yeah. HBO okay, Max. Thank you. Yeah. So check that out. That's next week on FilmSack. June's a little weird, but we got you covered. We'll figure it out, everybody, what we're doing, and make sure you have content. Don't worry about us. In fact, forget I said anything. That'll do it for us.
Notice.
Thank you all for listening. Please leave us reviews wherever you get your shows. And in the meantime, have a good one for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
If I see him, I'll sure give him the message.
Oh, I like that. We'll see you next time.
If you like what you just heard, there's a very good chance you will like all the shows on the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
You want the bed or the couch?
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.